on 98 FM and online. This is Phoenix FM.
Ronnie.
Law does its job. Dean Cox again. This time he's in. At the second time of asking, Dean Cox takes Leighton Orient a step closer to Wembley.
Carroll.
Jonathan Tahue.
Capable of anything. Tahue! Equaliser for Leighton Orient.
We're not a city. We're not a town. We're the only one of us around, and you know where we can be found. When Saturday comes again, we'll be trying to do our best to cheer all those on who wear the vest. Whatever challenge, whatever test, we'll lay an Orient from E10. Lay an Orient from E10.
Welcome to the Orient Hour. I'm Simon Cooper, and tonight it's a tale of two Darrens. We'll be discussing Orient's defeat to Bristol Rovers, refereed by Mr. Darren Drysdale, and later on we'll have an interview with Orient captain Darren Prattley. We'll also have Victor's view, and we'll be hearing from Richie Wellens. But there's no Roper's rant, because according to the man himself, he's got nothing to rant about. Now, to discuss all that in the studio, I'm joined by Tony Smith. Hello, Tony.
Good evening.
And Rich Priest on the buttons and the words. Hey, Rich.
Hey, so how you doing, mate?
I'm good, thank you. Right then, let's start with Bristol Rovers. A 1-0 defeat at home on Saturday. Unchanged 11 from the victory over Blackpool last Tuesday, which is possibly our strongest team at the moment. Brin, Galbraith, Beckles, Cooper, James, Brown, Elmiz, Ford, Monker, O'Neill and Soteriou. A defeat at home on a Saturday following a Tuesday night match. Fair to say we looked a little bit tired, didn't we, Rich?
Yeah, I mean, I had a few friends ping me in the morning, actually, looking at their ackers. How do you think we're going to get? You're going to get on? Is it worth doing you? And I thought exactly the same as I thought against Burton, actually. I was like, well, at this stage of the season, and the interviews that Richie's given, I said, I've just got a feeling today's not going to be, I think it seems to really hit. If you play Tuesday, Saturday, especially the fact that they had the day off, that's the thing. So I just had a feeling it was going to be one of those games, and it's disappointing. I mean, I didn't think Bristol Rovers were... I thought for the first 10 minutes they looked okay, actually. But other than that, I didn't think they offered too much. And I thought we completely dominated the second half. So it was disappointing. But I didn't have a feeling. I say it makes such a difference at this stage of the season. It seems playing Tuesday, Saturday, if that other team hasn't played. So I just sensed that after that, and the reasons we've been given about fatigue a lot recently, I could see it coming, really, which... It's a shame, but I mean, I think one result and everyone will probably start saying again, we're still in the mix, so let's see how this Saturday goes.
Yeah, I mean, I was caught up with in the we're still in the mix hype, because a few of my friends came along on Saturday, and whenever I bring mates along, we always lose. And also, everyone had a bet beforehand, they were like, are you going to win? I was like, yeah, of course we are, definitely, we've got this, and obviously we didn't win. Tony, what's your assessment, mate?
You've just reminded me of my school days. It always worked like that. If I brought any of my mates from school, we did always lose. But I think there's a tendency to get a bit too up and down. I mean, we win a game 1-0 and suddenly we're world beaters, and we go the other way and lose 1-0 and it's all gone wrong. But, the problem was that we obviously 19 goal attempts and only 4 on target, and the goalkeeper stopped them all, and one free kick and they score. So that's life a little bit.
Yeah.
But if we can keep winning a couple and then losing one, that'll actually be good enough. So let's go out and win the next couple.
I hesitate to mention the elephant in the room, which was the 19 corners or whatever it was. I mean, that was ridiculous, wasn't it?
Yeah, I've got to be honest, I didn't realise it was that many at the time. I mean, I knew we'd had a few corners, but it was only, I think, after the game, everyone was saying, it's 20 corners. And I was like, I just didn't really think of it. I mean, I've never really considered us to be good at set piece. I mean, I don't want to bring this up again anyway, but I'm talking about over the years, I've never really thought of us as a team that, other than when kind of Dean Smith, like Stevenage at the moment, they've got Piers Yarny at the back. Every time he scores, you just know it's from a corner. Whereas I remember when we had Dean Smith playing for us, it was similar to that, actually. He seemed to do that a lot. But I would say since then, I've not really known many people do that, really. And it doesn't seem to be anything that we particularly do under Richie, certainly. And Yeah, I mean, I don't think there was much created out of those chances. I mean, Sol Brin, I don't think did anything in the second half, did he? The first half, really, again, there was a bit more even. I thought they, you know, when they took the lead, I wasn't thinking I don't deserve that, or it was against the run of play as such, but, you know, I think a draw first half would have been fair, and then, you know, us, the second half, I thought we were pretty solid, really, pretty good, but again, it just fell a bit without that kind of... There was something slightly missing there up front again, I think, which I felt a lot this season, really.
Yeah, I don't want to go too boring, Stato, but with corners, it's something like 3-4% you actually score from. So I think people do sometimes get a little bit too, again, excited when you get one.
I think it's 1 in 99 or something.
I think it's 4% near post and 3% foul or something like that, which is the reason why they so often don't miss the first man, because they get told to just get it just over his head. But... yeah, we'll keep going on that one. It's a shame Sol wasn't much good. The last corner, of course, was straight on his head and he jumped under it.
Strange
for a corner, was it?
It came
to his feet, there was actually no one in the way, so that might have been the better way to use the goalkeeper. But
look, we're all quite optimistic in this room, I think. Rich, you're probably the least optimistic over it.
Oh, look at that, you talking about it,
But I thought... Max Sanders looked bright when he came on, actually, on Saturday. I thought he made a difference.
Yeah, I can see him, actually. I think possibly we'll change things around now on at the weekend. Yeah. I mean, we've had two games now where Molker's come off at half-time. You can't keep doing that, I don't think. I've got a feeling now he's had his period, possibly. Mm. I hope I'm wrong, but, you know, I think... And I think this is something that... I didn't really see this mentioned much elsewhere, really. I thought there would be more made of this, but, you know, I was kind of disappointed myself when Richie said in his interview that Ollie O'Neill came off with fatigue at half time. I mean, he's only been with us 8 weeks. He has come off in a couple of matches, I don't know if that's a good sign, really, if a 21-year-old can't play, you know, January, February football, you know. He's getting the game time, and maybe he's just not used to it, possibly. I want to be fair, and, you know, we need him on the pitch, so he's not being subbed off that often, but I was kind of surprised and slightly disappointed that was the case, really, if he's got fatigue. I mean, I'd never really heard too many things about footballers having fatigue before this, or certainly at Orient, before this season, and it seems to be coming up a lot. I mean, it may just go to show how many injuries we've had here, that we are going with a small group of players, and I think, you know, if this is a case, I think possibly Richie needs to sort of look at either A, the team he's picking, or B, the subs he's bringing on, because it's the same starting 11 almost. It's the same subs that come on, and it's the same, you know, the two youngsters are coming on very late on, and maybe they either need to start, or I have to be honest, I thought against Burton, Edwards was very good, actually. Yep. I thought he played really, really well that game. The two appearances since, I've got to be honest, that seems to be the complete mirror opposite of that performance. So I'd actually look at trying Dan Aduaje, is it? I'd look at possibly trying him out a bit more, I think, and because he's looked quite lively as well.
Yeah, and he actually, I mean, he almost got an assist, didn't he, on Saturday?
Yeah.
A lovely ball through for Pickett, who had a beautiful shot, and that was a goal.
Yeah, I've got to be honest. Yeah, well, do you know what? At the time, I have to be honest, I thought he'd put it wide. It was only, obviously they were screaming. Do you know when you see them screaming enough? You think maybe he did get a touch, and when I saw the replay, I couldn't believe that he didn't give it. But
he got more of a touch than Chris Martin did for his goal, to put it that way.
Yeah, well, again,
because I was in a good spot there in the East End, and there must have been some contractual reason for him claiming that.
Yeah, well,
we thought that was straight from
the free kick where we were sitting. Yeah, I have to be honest.
I mean, with Ollie O'Neill, I think it's a case of not being used to it. I mean, with football, you can get used to Saturday afternoon, Sunday morning, or whatever. But if you're coming from an under 21 background where you're not going to be playing 60 games a season or whatever you can end up doing in League One, I think it's a case of getting used to it, because he's only 21, and I think he will, and I think he's an asset.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I have to be honest, I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, I think, that I can't remember the last kind of January signing that's had as much of a positive impact, actually, as he's had so far, you know. He's been phenomenal, which half of me saying this is probably speaking from disappointment, really, because he's one of these players that you don't want to see him off, because he can do something out of nothing, really, whether that's an assist or a goal himself. So you don't really want him coming off, and certainly not with fatigue anyway. Yeah. I mean, they've had a week off now, or as in there's no game, so, you know, hopefully everything will be fine for Saturday. But Richie sort of mentioned it, and he sort of said himself in the interview, didn't he, that you know, I wish you'd have told us this before the game, really. Yeah. And I think that's a lot of the problem is you've got to rely on the players almost, to be honest. And I get the feeling
that
hasn't happened a lot.
And that's just experience, isn't it? That is where the experience comes in. And that is what he is a young player. You know, he hasn't got that experience. And he needs to manage himself in a different way. And, you know, we'll speak to Darren Pratt later, and he's still going at 38, but he does manage himself in a different way. He would tell Richie if he's tired, if he can't play. You know, that just comes with experience, doesn't it? Tony?
Yes, I certainly agree with
as
that.
An experienced man.
An experienced man. I thought Piggott did well when he came on. Let's throw him one in there.
I thought he did well.
Yeah. It wasn't just the turn and shot. I thought we had a bit more of a focus there when he came on, a bit more something to play it.
Yeah, well, should we have a listen to what Richie Wellens had to say today, Victor?
Richie, thanks for joining us. It was a difficult afternoon.
A bit of smash and grab. We've conceded 3 shots on our goal, 1 on target, and we've beaten 1-0. Poor goal to give away, sloppy, just banging a leg for a set play. The delivery by them is very, very good, and Martin does what he does best, get across people in the box. But other than that, the second half, I can't ever remember him being in our box, even in our half. 18 corners, we need to be a bit more clever around the box, and ultimately that's what's cost us the game, along with giving us away a cheap set play. I just think that we started the game okay, first 10 minutes was good, and then for the 10 minutes to 45 we just looked tired. So many opportunities to take people 1v1 or shift the ball out of our feet and just look that little bit leggy. Ollie O'Neill obviously had to come off at half time, just fatigued. So again, a little bit of inexperience, because he tells at half time that he was feeling really tired before the game, and just be honest with us and tell us before the game so we can start somebody else who's fresh. But a disappointing day in the results, in terms of the result, but another really, really solid performance, and a performance that we shouldn't really lose the game.
I made it 17 corners.
18.
18, wasn't it? Didn't create too many chances.
What you've got to do, Dave, stick one of them in the onion bag, and then it changes the game. But listen, the set play for them changes the dynamics of the game. Because before that, I didn't think he was a threat. After that, I didn't think he was a threat, and he got some talented players. Yeah, a disappointing day, but you're going to get some of them. The big thing for me is we've lost 2 games in a long time, and both games is when we've played Tuesday, and we've lost on a Saturday when the opposition has had a free week. And it's not an excuse, it's just visually. You looked at O'Neill after 10, 15 minutes, you looked at Monk, you looked at Shackford, and they just looked tired. Hence, we needed to make a few changes.
Now, I know you've got an FA hearing on Monday, so you've got to be careful when I say Darren Drysdale.
Oh, why are you asking me? I don't know the rules anymore. I don't know the rules. It's actually a laughing joke between myself and their bench. I'd be very surprised if the Bristol Rovers staff, media staff, don't ask Matt the same question. And it's just borderline embarrassing performance. Let's not even speak about the performance, because every decision we look at, that's a foul, no play on. We're looking at each other. And it's for both, by the way. It's not just for us. And then 5 minutes he's added on. 5 minutes. It took him 2.5 minutes to show him the red card and for their lad to be sent off. All the subs, the amount of time that he wastes, and where are the rules? I say all the time, I just want consistency in, if you're going to be consistently putting it. We had 7 minutes on Tuesday, and it was never been 7 minutes. Today was 5, and I'm not joking when I said it should have been easy double figures, because the amount of time wasting. The referee couldn't even work the board. The fourth official couldn't even work the board to get the number up. It took him another minute to make one sub, and it's just. I'll let Matt get fine. Let Matt speak about him. But I still played when Darren Drysdale was refereeing, and when I was playing and I watched him ref, he probably won't last long. Still's going. Which, can we get some young, fit, energetic referees that have dialogue, that are, got a bit of character? Can we get them in the game? I tell you one thing, whenever I get sacked or I leave a club and I have a little bit of time out, I'm seriously going to take my referees' badges, because I will make it look so much easier than what they do. It is so hard. And you know what I'll do? I'll have a bit of banter with the players, like all the good ones do. I'll be honest with the staff, well, I thought this, I thought that. I wouldn't just go away, don't speak to me. And I said, listen, you'll speak to all of the managers and all have the same problem.
I look forward to seeing that. So how are you going to approach Monday in that hearing?
I'm going to call me referees badges and do me courses. The hearing. Yeah. I received a letter. I've left it to Lindsay. I'm not going to. I'll let her reply for me because there's no point. There's no point in giving your honest assessment of what happened, because if you appeal it, one, the English justice system is you're innocent until proven guilty. I'm not. Not in these situations. You're guilty until you're guilty, and you're guilty even if you're innocent, and you're guilty, guilty, guilty. So there's no point in me arguing it. And if you argue it, you get an extra game ban, you get more money. So you didn't get a free appeal. You get an extra game and an extra fine on top of it. So what's the point? There's two things that drain me in English football. Manchester United drain me. Yeah, I have to watch them every week, and they've got a derby tomorrow, and that is going to be painful. Because you know what's coming, so they drain me, and the referees just drain the life out of me. They drain the life out of me.
But at least your players have a week to prepare for that trip to Wigan.
Not a play. Listen, it was a decent performance today, and if we perform like that on the whole, then we'll win a lot more games than we lose. You have to give Bristol credit, because he come here, sat deep, soaked up a load of pressure, got blocked, trying to put the bodies on the line, and we didn't test the goalkeeper enough. But you have to give them credit when they. The putting block on his. I mean, we've had a lot of possession, a lot of it around their box in the last 20 minutes, especially, and they're putting block on. So you have to give them a lot of credit. But that's where you need help from the officials. To go, okay, they're wasting time every opportunity. I get it. It's gamesmanship. It's part of the game. I embrace that part of the game if they're doing it. But then you have to accordingly add the right minutes.
Finally, for me, Richie, can I ask, is there any update on Theo at all?
Theo'll be a long, long time.
Has he had any op?
He's having it next week.
Yeah. We wish him well.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right,
thank you. Thanks very much.
So there, Richie, very much mentioning the refereeing at the weekend. Not happy with the amount of time added on at the end, the inconsistency of some of the decisions. He says he's going to go and do his own refereeing course, which will be interesting. So, yeah, what do we think of Richie's assessment of the match?
I agreed with most of it, to be honest. I thought we played decently. I thought the amount of time added on was surprisingly low. I don't think we had too much to complain about with the ref compared with some of the stuff I've seen on the socials. But all in all, a little bit disappointing, but not the end of the world, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say the main thing was, you know, the time added on a minute was ridiculous. It was like 4 minutes or something.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've had 7 or 8 minutes when no one's made a sub and stuff. It's ridiculous. But, yeah, I mean, I thought the linesmen, they really didn't help out at all. I mean, especially, so, you know, you sit in the same stand as me. I think it was the first half. It might be the second. The guy running the line now, I mean, in fact, I think it was the first half, because obviously he just wasn't catching up with play for them a lot of the time. I mean, you know, we've seen the clip online of the goal looking potentially offside. Well, I mean, the clip sort of, I think if the guy's touched it in the middle, I think he is offside. But, you know, it's tight enough that, I don't think anyone around me was saying anything at the time. And we certainly didn't shout for that. I mean, that's the sort of thing where VAR would come in and help you. But I think when no one, your own players, and as fans, you didn't even notice it yourself, you can let no one go. So I'm not going to be too fussed about that. And the fact you can see it's offside, okay, maybe afterwards you think. But, you know, if the linesman didn't spot that, no one else seemed to spot it. So, but yeah, I mean, I thought the linesman didn't help him. But I thought he was equally bad for both teams. As Richie said there, you know, I'll let Matt take the fine for that. Because he's, you know, you've probably noticed yourself, the last couple of games, he's really kind of reining himself in on that touchline. I mean, in the sense that, you know, he's not even touching the ball when it comes near him now. And, you know, he probably can't afford to. I mean, this is like, he's got to get the book thrown at him when it comes to, like, what happens. I might miss the rest of the season, maybe. But,
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's... the thing is, you sound a bit like a bad loser, I think, when you say things like that, when you lose a game. Because had we have won, we probably wouldn't have mentioned it. It's the sort of thing, basically, any team that loses, they're always going to sort of mention the ref, aren't they? And he was bad, but, you know, I didn't think he stood out a mile compared to a lot of others. I mean, certainly one of the worst ones, but, you know, I've seen a lot worse over the years, especially in the National League. So, I mean, it wasn't the ref's fault that we lost. It was our own doing, really.
Completely. It just builds up, doesn't it? Like, I think I am not necessarily one for shouting and screaming. My mates who I sit with might disagree, but I did get annoyed on Saturday afternoon. By the 85th minute, I'd had enough, and I was not happy with the ref and the decisions. But I was frustrated about the football, obviously.
Yeah.
It was when that Piggott shot wasn't given as a corner. I was like, what is going on here? That was so, to me, it was so obvious.
Yeah, well, I think because where I was, it just looked like he just put it wide.
Yeah,
but I saw the reaction of the players and thought, well, he's obviously has touched that. But then when I saw the highlights back, I thought it was actually more obvious. And they're the sort of things the ref should be spotting. I mean, that was... Because, I mean, I saw online someone said, oh, the linesman did that. But that was the ref, because immediately he pointed there. He didn't even look at his linesman. Yeah. Maybe the linesman did the same thing. But he looked straight at and pointed to the goal kick there. So, I mean, yeah, that, you know, they're basic things, but... You know, as we were saying with our corners, it doesn't make much difference anyway. So, yeah.
It wouldn't have made another difference, would it? Go on, Tony.
Well, we should. I think we should stop. We should start with Piggott. If he manages to get a turn and get a shot in, I think we should be thinking about starting him. To be honest, because I don't think the two young lads did that well. I mean, it might be a case of him being first sub rather than third sub next week.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I don't know. I mean, you know, there's
a tendency to be nice to think, oh, they're only young lads. So,
yeah.
I agree.
I agree about the Arsenal fella. I think last two games, he certainly seems to have actually, you know, 60 minutes against Burton, I thought he was our best player. That's how good I thought he was. But the last two sub appearances really sort of, I don't know what's happened to him. So I'd like to see the other guy get more of a chance from Bournemouth. Piggott, I mean, I've got to be honest, there's something going on there, I think most people probably don't know about, including me. But I just think potentially he's not in the right frame of mind to be thrown in straight away. I mean, you know, a 10-minute cameo or 5-minute cameo even, I don't think warrants a start, in my opinion, just yet. I think maybe, if anything, he could possibly come on for slightly longer, give him half hour maybe. But I certainly wouldn't be throwing Piggott into the starting 11 just yet, I don't think. I mean, he's not even made the bench for a few of these games, and I have a feeling it's nothing to do with injury either. So, I wouldn't be scrambling for him to get in the starting 11 yet. But I certainly think he's an option off the bench, and I'd probably rather see that at the moment. But yeah, I mean, you know, I did think, I was impressed with him in his small appearances actually he made on Saturday. So I'd be more than happy for him to be in the squad on Saturday. Yeah.
Well, did anyone actually see what happened with the sending off? Because I completely missed that.
No, it's enough actually. I forgot about it. That's how much I saw it. Yeah.
I turned around to see our centre half on the floor. I mean, I believe it was a blow to the chest, but that's only what I've been told. I haven't seen any footage that actually caught it.
No, I don't think it was. Yeah, so I looked to see if I could spot that. I mean, from what I read, he just hit him, apparently. I mean, I assume Cooper's probably milked this slightly there, because he seemed to be all right a couple of minutes later. But, you know, you can't do that. And the discussion around where I was sitting originally was, it's got to be a penalty then if you send him off. But I think someone said the ball's out of play, so you can't do that, which, that was frustrating.
It's just common assault.
At one point, I thought, hang on, we might have a penalty here. And I was only bothered when I thought we might get a penalty. When I realised it was a corner, I thought, oh, I don't care about it. I mean, it was just one of those games, I think, you knew that even with the sending off, the last 5-10 minutes, whatever it was, it probably wasn't going to make much difference. Right. We could have played another half hour there and I'm not scored, I think.
All right, well, let's put Bristol Rovers to bed, because I think we've all had enough of it. But maybe let's hear what Dave Victor's got to say in Victor's View.
At the time of recording this piece, we've yet to hear the outcome of the FA's hearing into Rich's third red card of the season. On Saturday, once again, our post-match interview with the O's boss was dominated by talking about the referee. The sense of frustration and disappointment that comes after any defeat was compounded by the performance of Darren Drysdale. He is not the reason why the O's lost to Bristol Rovers. They're a good side. But the manner in which he conducted himself did not help the emotions of the faithful as they made their way home. He's an RAF sergeant, one of the most experienced referees currently on the league list. He's been a referee at that level for 26 years. But I believe that you don't notice a good referee, and it always seems to be the opposite when Drysdale's in charge. He appears to deliberately want to ensure that he is centre stage. The decision to only add 5 additional minutes, clearly an error, but to me it felt like Drysdale used it as an opportunity to ensure that post-match the reaction would all be about him. Congratulations to Richie Wellens, his nomination for Manager of the Month of February, when his side achieved 5 wins. But in our interview, the O's boss made the point that a recent pattern has emerged. His squad struggling to follow a midweek fixture with a Saturday victory. Both Orient and Wigan have a 4-week to prepare for this weekend's clash. And then both Stevenage and the O's have a midweek game prior to what could be a huge clash in North Hertfordshire on the 16th of March. Leighton Orient's game is against strugglers Port Vale next Tuesday night. The following evening, Steve Evans' side travel to promotion chasing Peterborough. there are so many inconsistent sides in this division, and the Latics is another that go from hot to cold. A famous victory over High Flyers Bolton, immediately followed by Saturday's defeat at struggling Fleetwood. The Latics' home form significantly better than that on the road. The fifth best in the division, 10 wins in front of their own supporters. Sean Mahoney's side would only be just 2 points behind the O's had it not been for the 8-point deduction issued in May from the EFL after the club failed to deposit the funds needed to cover the wage bill. Former O's loanee Charlie Kelman, likely to feature, the 22-year-old striker, was rumoured to be joining the O's on a permanent basis in the summer, but he moved north from Queen's Park Rangers in the January transfer window. His first four games for Wigan has seen him provide one assist and score one goal. I welcomed the measured statement from one of our most experienced players and the chair of the Professional Footballers Association, Omar Beckles, regarding the signing of Jack Simpson. Omar explained that he'd met with the former Cardiff defender and he believes that Simpson has genuine remorse for the terrible racial insult that he directed towards a teammate. In his interview for Orient Live, which is still available on YouTube, Beckles stated that he deserves a second chance and that Orient is an inclusive club that has the ability to educate and develop Simpson's understanding of a very important matter. Finally, best wishes to Theo Archibald. He's undergone the medical procedure on his knee injury. I hope it's well. He's definitely missed.
Thanks, Dave. So Dave Victor's addressed it there, Richie Wellens addressed it, and Omar Beckles has given his thoughts as well. So it's time we had a little just chat about Jack Simpson as well. A centre-back who's played for Bournemouth, Cardiff, won the league with Rangers in Scotland. Last year was sacked by Cardiff and given a ban by the FA for using racist language towards a teammate on a pre-season tour. So it's fair to say the initial announcement of his signing divided the Orient fan base, didn't it? Gents, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it's probably someone a bit wiser than me once pointed out if we all got judged on the worst thing we ever done, none of us would actually do quite terribly well. So I think we've actually got to leave it, this one, with the people who've actually spoken to the guy and decided to take a chance on him. I mean, but that's life, isn't it, to a certain extent? I mean, I've no natural sympathy, you know, coming from, you know, son of an immigrant background or whatever, fair in the out sort of behaviour, but I'm willing to give him a go and we'll see. You know, I've seen what's been said on the socials and it's fair to say that people are divided on it, but I agree with giving him a go.
Rich?
Yeah, I think Tony's probably pretty much said it all there. I mean, on paper, you know, without the background piece, he's played a lot. He's never played this. He's always played higher than this level before, pretty much. I think one strange thing was for his age, he hasn't actually played that many games. He's only about 70 matches and he's 27, which is surprising. But yeah, I mean, it was always kind of going to be controversial, I think. But then, you know, I look at players in the past that we've had. I mean, I remember, like, Ricky Otto had done time for armed robbery, I think it was.
Not long before he signed for us as well.
Yeah, Elliot Omazuzi was involved in some gang warfare or something going on. And what I didn't realise, actually, or I'd completely forgotten about, was there was even some controversy with John Mackey when we signed him. And, you know, he's became a bit of a cult hero down at the O's. So he's not the first player that we've signed with a bit of controversy behind him. I think these things are probably a bit more highlighted now or heightened in this day and age, possibly. But that's fair enough. But, I mean, I watched his interview, and genuinely the guy looked like he was on the verge of tears throughout the whole thing. I thought that was the first kind of impression that I got. He seemed very remorseful and you know, he could be a very good actor for all I know, but he really genuinely did. And, you know, he's spoken to Omar, he's spoken to Darren. Yep. So, you know, the club are kind of comfortable with it. I mean, he's got another 5 games, I think, on his ban, which, you know, in that sense, I thought it was a bit of a strange signing because I feel we need someone possibly now. So the fact that I have a feeling there's more of an eye on next season for
definitely,
this. I mean,
definitely.
I would be surprised. Well, I mean, obviously, it depends how he does, but I'd be surprised from the fact he's only going to be playing in our last 4 or 5 matches that he won't get another contract for next season unless he performs very poorly. So I think there's obviously a lot more to it than just this season. But yeah, I mean, I was slightly surprised because, you know, we've got our... You know, we've got a lot of kind of groups at Orient, you know, the Punjabios and, you know, there's the new Jewish group, Adam Shuganos and stuff. So, you know, I think we're kind of, the way as a club, we're kind of quite tolerant of it, you know. And so I think in that sense, it kind of, you did think, well, I can see some controversy coming here, but...
Yeah, I mean, it's not just players in the past. I mean, we have players and staff here at the moment who have the old skeleton in the cupboard rattling around and things that have gone on in the past with them and,
I mean,
if you're getting someone who's out of contract in February and he's going to be, you know, any good at all, there's going to be something going on there. And
completely, I think it is obviously not black and white, and it is nuanced. All of this stuff, it's hard to talk about because it is very serious stuff. And personally, it did make me feel a little bit uncomfortable about it. The racist language made me feel uncomfortable, and then seeing people from that particular community talking about it and saying how they feel uncomfortable about it and Orient signing him, you know, it makes you think twice a little bit. Now, obviously, the party line and the way everyone's come out and said we're also an inclusive club, people make mistakes, we deserve giving them a second chance, can't disagree with that, but I think it has made me take a step back and think I'm not sure about it, actually.
I would be interested in listening to people from that community and taking their views on board, certainly. Yeah. And I hope we do.
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing that sort of stood out for me, a comment I saw online, was, you know, someone said you're at the perfect club to you know, show now that... I mean, he'll be thrown into the community work, I think, probably more than anyone else. You know, we've had that in the past. I remember with Elliot Omazusi, I think pretty much every week after everything that went on, he was doing community work, and he came out doing really well out of it, you know, and I have a feeling that Jack will go through the same process now.
I hope so.
He'll be the one that they make, you know, I say make to do this, but, you know, I'm sure he'll put himself forward for it as well.
Yeah.
But, yeah, someone said online, you're at the perfect club to sort kind of... you know, make yourself a better person kind of thing. And I think he probably is, you know. It is a very, very big community club, probably more so than most other clubs I would say I could think of. And I think he's in the ideal place to try and to prove himself now.
Yeah, and I think we do generally trust the management and the leadership of Orient.
Yeah.
And they've been very good over the last 6 years.
Yeah.
And we've got to trust them. I mean, Richie said, you know, we are a diverse club. We'd never jeopardise that. And if I thought he was going to jeopardise that, he wouldn't be anywhere near this football club.
Yeah.
And similarly, you've got to listen to what Omar Beckel says as well. And I think...
yeah, that was a very good interview.
It was.
Actually,
he said everyone deserves a second chance, and I'm glad we as a club have given this opportunity. So you're right there, Richie. We are the sort of club that people can come to and be rehabilitated and
exactly,
make their name again. And, you know, giving people a second chance is a good thing, obviously. Tony?
Yes, I entirely agree. And I hope he can play.
Okay.
We don't know yet.
Well, let's move on, and we will have a little chat with Darren Prattley now, because we are his biggest fan, and we'll follow him until he loves us. Darren, Grant and myself were lucky enough to chat to our Orient skipper. Darren, 10 more years, Prattley, earlier today, and this is what he had to say.
Darren Prattley, welcome to the Orient Hour. Thank you so much for joining us. I think we'll start with the obvious question, and this comes from Chris W. via Twitter. Are you signing a 10-year contract with the Orient?
Hey, my dad is asking that question. Obviously, I hear the chants and the songs, and it's very nice. Very nice to hear that when you're playing, especially at my age. But not a 10-year contract. I think we're speaking at the moment maybe about extending it for another year while I still feel well and still contributing to the team. Not as long as 10 years.
And okay, let's take a step back and have a little think about what's this, your assessment of this season so far, Darren?
Bit mixed. We had a slow start. Obviously, we played a different system. We had injuries, people out. So we had a slow start. I didn't think we won in the first 4 or 5 games. So that was a bit tricky. So we was waiting for that win to happen, to come along. And then we picked up a little bit, went on a little run. And the major turning point, I still believe, is the Bolton game. We're 3-0 down away at a big club. And that wasn't us in the first half. I don't think since Richie's come in, we've been 3-0 down after 45 minutes. Looked like we had no way of getting back into the game. And then at half-time, we changed everything. We went more aggressive. It was a bit like our old self from the last 12 months, 18 months that Richie was here. And that was a turning point. And from then, I don't think we've looked back since that game.
I was at that game, Darren, and I still think that... I'm still wondering how your shot near the end there never went in. I think a defender blocked it, didn't he? Because that would have been bedlam if that would have gone in and got the equaliser. Do you remember?
Yeah, I know. Of all places, to be fair, I thought about scoring there, obviously, my previous club. And the last shot of the game, to probably get a point. Was it obviously a little bit disappointing, but yeah, I think that was a turning point, especially being three down. I'm surprised you're still there after 45 minutes.
We stayed behind the team as always, as you probably heard from the stands. A little bit of irony. Yeah. We were singing your National League champions. You'll never sing that when we were 3-0 down. It was overall a good day out, but the first half we were a bit shell-shocked, yes, I think, even in the stands.
Yeah, yeah. And sometimes you need that in football. Sometimes you need that little wake-up call and maybe something. You need to go through a tough patch to get on the positive run, and that happened to us. And like I said, well, I don't think we looked back since then.
So we've been on that positive run. It's been very positive since the turn of the year. But we have had a lot of injuries, and we've managed to cope with them. And how do you think we've managed to cope with all these injuries on the whole?
I think that goes back to training. So the manager and the staff are adamant that we train the way we play. So the standards in training are very high. If you're not playing, it's not a place where you can go in and sulk. You have to work hard. So the standards are there. I think the manager and the staff, they believe in all the players. So he keeps telling us that he obviously can only pick 11 to start a game, but he believes in his squad. I think after every game, he always mentions the squad. So the squad is very important, and it's important. I think we had it last year when we was winning quite a lot, and the boys that weren't playing, when they did come in, they done well. So you need to carry on that. And it's not an easy thing to have, because last year we was winning every game and top of the league, and it looked like we was going to get promoted. This year we've lost a few games, and that's when it can go a little bit sour when you're not playing. You could start getting in your groups, but that's remained positive. And whoever's come in has done just as well as the boys missing out. You look at, like, for instance, Dan Aggie. I believe he gets in any team in the league. I can't think of the top of my head. Dan Hatt is having a great season. He's out. He was out. Theo Archibald, probably our player of the season before he goes and gets injured. So we've missed some big players. Max Sanders has had a little bit of a tough start with his illness, and coming back and having a run of games. So you can imagine, if we can get all these boys fit, up and firing, and they can have a full season, then you never know where that can take us.
Missing Jordan Graham there as well.
Sorry, I thought about Jordan Graham. Yeah, Jordan Graham. So he missed the pre-season because he was out of contract. Come back into the squad, started finding his feet, doing well. I think he got 4 or 5 assists in that time, and he goes and does his cruciate. So we've had a bit of bad luck in terms of that. But whenever there's a little bit of bad luck, there's always a positive. And people like Ollie O'Neill, who's come in, would have not played as much if Theo was still as fit, and Jordan Graham, and maybe they might not have signed him. So there's always a positive in everything, and them boys will come back stronger and make us stronger as a team.
Second cheeky question of the interview now, if you don't mind, Darren. This one comes from friend of the Orient Hour, Paul Levy. Do you think we'll make the playoffs?
I think we've got a good chance. We're in with a shout. I think, if I'm being honest, I think there's one place up for grabs in the sixth place. I think fifth place at the moment may be a bit too far, and I think they've got a game in hand. I think it's out of us, Blackpool, Oxford, Lincoln, and maybe Bristol City. Bristol Rovers. I don't know if they've got a game in hand, but I think, and Stevenage, obviously, that are in there. But out of them, that 4 or 5 teams fighting for that sixth place, and we've still got to play a couple of the top six. So I think we've got a great chance. Obviously, we can't afford too many more slip-ups because we're running out of games. But we're positive and we have a chance, and we certainly try to get in there.
Darren, over to you.
Darren, going back to fitness, what do you put your ability to stay fit and continue to perform at this level at your age, dare I say it, down to?
Looking after yourself. I spend 15-20 minutes in an ice bath every day, to be fair. I do that every day. So on my way home, I'll go into the local supermarket and buy 6 bags of ice and make sure I have an ice bath in the evening. I think as well, I like competing. I like being competitive. I like to compete. So every day I want to compete. So I think that keeps me young. I think my teammates keep me young. I don't really see myself as 38. So I still, if you see me with them, I mess about and have a laugh with them. I don't really see myself as a 38-year-old older man in the change room who don't really interact with the team. So my teammates keep me fit and healthy. Obviously, I like to train the way I play. And, yeah, I think mainly probably enthusiasm. I still love playing. I love the game. And yeah, I don't know. I think sometimes when you get to a certain age and you start telling yourself you're tired and you're feeling tired, you're going to be tired. So I don't really like to think like that. I like to think, yeah, I'm just as young as them and I want to compete with them.
Well, you're still doing that, that's for sure. So my next question, is it difficult to take on the captaincy when coming on as a sub? A question from Dave Smith.
A few times I haven't taken the armband. I think sometimes when whoever's captain, so if Omer's playing or if Omer ain't playing, Eddie's playing, I think that person sometimes should stay with the captain's armband. I'm not one of these captains, like, give me the armband, it's mine. Like, I'm the captain of the club. I don't really like that, to be honest. I'm not that type of person. So you won't never see me go searching for a captain's armband because I'm captain. I believe we're all leaders in our own way. I have, obviously, the honour of wearing the captain's armband. I'm captain of the club. But, yeah, I've had it a few times where Omer's offered it to me and I've said to him, I'm not really, like, you keep it. Like, you started the game as captain, you're captain. So that sometimes they give it to me, sometimes I'm not really fussed about that. That's one thing I don't like. And I've said that to them many a times because Iddy's always, if Iddy's captain, wants to give it to me straight away. And I'm like, no, you're captain for the day. That's your moment. Enjoy it.
Yeah, that answers my question beautifully. Another one about the songs that we sing about you. In my time following Orient, most players get one song at best. I don't recall many. Like you, that's two questions in one, really. So you've got two songs. I'm not going to ask you to pick a favourite, but what I would ask, if you ever played anywhere where the fans perhaps didn't take you quite like the O's fans have taken to you?
Yeah, probably at Bolton at first, because we had a relegation from the Premier League. Obviously, I stayed there for 7 years, so I was part of the relegation from the Premier League to the Championship. So I've had a few songs not as nice as the ones at Orient. but I've been lucky in my career where I've had clubs where I've tended to have a song where I've been. I don't know if... I can't tell you why, but I'm someone that gives their all, so maybe they can see a connection between working hard and themselves, obviously working hard, working hard, family, like a club. So, yeah, I haven't always had it easy, well, not easy, but I ain't always had a song, especially not at Bolton in my early career.
Well, you've got two with us, so, you know, long may continue. You never, you know, you might get a three. We'll have to
No more years if I carry on playing.
Well, hopefully not that one. You'll know it's time to hang your boot up if we do. My last question before I hand you on to Grant was, I've noticed, this is from me, I've noticed when a decision doesn't go your way, you do this little jump. And it always makes me laugh. I think you're doing it because you'd rather show your frustration in that way than rant and get yourself booked. Am I right? Or explain the jump.
I've always done it. Yeah, I've always done it. To be fair, my missus has got loads of videos of me doing it. Remember when Soccer AM was on, they got me a couple of times on there doing that. At Swansea at a younger age, I used to pull my shorts right up as high as I can. Yeah, it's just something I've always done. I always jump and have a little scream to myself. I'm not really thinking of the booking at the time. I just think I think I'm right in that decision. So, yeah, it's a little tantrum and still 38 and still doing it. So, yeah, it's just one of them things. Yeah.
Grant?
Hi, Darren. Thanks again for coming on. A couple of questions from the fans' forums and Twitter. Paul Watts has asked... have you had talks yet with the club about next season? I think you've half answered that already. So is there something possible, or alternatively, would you consider going into management if you didn't carry on playing?
I think at the moment we're speaking, myself and Martin and the agent are speaking about probably extending for another year. After my playing career, I'd like to go into coaching. I haven't really thought about management, but coaching is something that I enjoy. I've done my badges. I was on the same course as Matty Harold. We've done our A licence together 2 years ago, I think now. I enjoy I enjoy that side of it. When I'm doing it, I get the buzz for it. So that's something that I'd like to go into after I finish playing. But I haven't really thought about management at the moment, but coaching. And then I think you build your career and your CV from there. And then you obviously think about management when you're in that situation.
Yeah, see whether you take to it and where best you see yourself going forwards, because obviously you've got to be happy with what you're doing, having played for so long. Second question from fans, from Gary Watt, who's an East End season ticket holder. So you've had successful promotions at Bolton, Swansea, Charlton, and with the O's, of course. Looking back over your seasons at the Orient, though, how would you assess the three seasons you've had with us?
Yeah, first season was a bit difficult. I don't know if it's that transition. Obviously, coming, you had the previous promotion from the National League, and you had a season, obviously, where Justin Edinburgh, what happened to Justin? So there was a lot of building to do from that, because it affected a lot of people around the club. So we had a tricky start at the first season, the first half of the season. And then obviously when the gaffer come in, we had a positive end to that season. Second season was great, obviously promotion. And this season now we're in with a run. Personally, I haven't played as much this season as probably I would have liked, but I understand my role within the club. The manager is very open with me, we're open with each other, and I'm still contributing to the team. So far, so good. So I'm still enjoying it. Whether I'm playing or not, I'm behind the boys. I'm not like a young 19-year-old on the bench waiting for the team to lose to get a game. I don't think like that. I see the bigger picture, and I enjoy the young players doing well. It gives you a good feeling when the boys are doing well, and you know that they've got this long career to go through, what I'm going through, coming to the back end of, and they could go and reach the top. So if they listen and learn off the manager and the coaching staff, I'm looking forward to seeing them in a few years. Go and watch them and give them a song for myself when I'm in the stands.
So as you as enthusiastic as I am about going to Wigan on Saturday, is that still there? Or is that, thought of that journey, come on, be honest.
That part of the world, I don't really go up there to play football, to be honest. I don't really go up there on a weekend or anything. I know the manager lives up that way. He loves it up there. But I'm a London boy. But now it's part and parcel of it, because obviously we have a little bit of banter on the coach on the way up. We'll train on the way up. So I don't mind that. And it's a night in the hotel room, and you get your bed to yourself. So I can't moan at that.
Great. A couple from me, a couple of different things I like to ask outside of the norm. Hopefully you don't mind. So tell us a little bit about your early career. How did you get into football? Your youth, the clubs that you played for, like maybe when you were a junior and a youth player. Could you give us a bit of a background to that, please?
Yeah, so when I was probably 9, 10, I got an older brother who used to play. So he used to have like a little local church team where they used to have a youth club. So we used to go over there and play and had a football team. So
Where did you grow up, Darren?
In Barking, so not far from Leyton. Right. So it was a little church called Elium Manor in Barking. So we used to go over there and use their facilities and then play for them. And then I started playing Sunday football for Barking Colts, a local team, which was very good. We had a very good team at the time. And then I got scouted by Arsenal. So when I was 12, 13, I got scouted by Arsenal, and then they took me out of my secondary school, and I went to a school in Himes Park with Arsenal until I was at YTS stage. And at that stage, I was in and around England schoolboys. And they said if we played in England schoolboys, you'd get a pro contract. But they offered me a YTS, and then Fulham come in. So I ended up going to Fulham, signing a YTS and a pro form at Fulham. And then, spent 3 or 4 years there. And I think what I tell the young lads as well is about going on loan. So I went on loan to Brentford for a season. And then after that season, you come back and you feel like you're a man. Because at the time when you're 18, 19, you ran the first team. I was travelling with the first team, being 18th, 19th man in the Premier League for them, but not really playing and being a squad player and accepting it. But when you go on loan and you play in front of a crowd, I was lucky enough to have a song there as well. I was only on loan for a little bit. I enjoyed that and wanted to come back and play, and then ended up signing for Swansea. And then you're more on that, or
we're pretty much up to that. That's brilliant. Thank you.
Could you try again,
Darren? I was interested in when you were younger, did you play up front, or were you always midfielder? And also, how many goals were you scoring as a kid? Like, I always, professional footballers, I always think they must score 10 goals every game when they're playing at under 11s.
Yeah. I was a striker, believe it or not, and quite quick as well. So I was a centre forward. We used to have nicknames as at the Sunday Football League, and mine was 2 goals. I used to score 2 goals every game. Score quite a lot, to be fair. And then when I got to, like, I had England trials and I didn't want to go as a striker. I think that by that time I started playing up front, and then big centre halves are coming through, and I didn't really like that, being with my back to goal. So I went there as a midfielder, and I managed getting in the England schoolboys as a midfielder, and then from then I carried on playing midfield. That was probably just centre halves. I hated centre halves coming from the back of me, so I ended up going into midfield.
Brilliant. One more question, that without giving away any trade secrets, something that fascinates me is, at the level that we're at, League One level, what outside of the training pitch and the pitch itself, like when you're playing matches, do the club provide for the players, like psychologists, dentists, doctors, etc.? What goes on at the club outside, on a, say, for, obviously you're talking to us now, but on a general afternoon, what would you be doing? Would you just go home, or do the club help you along with things on a more personal basis?
Yeah, I think if you've got a problem, I think the medical staff are quite good in terms of if you needed a dentist. I think Ollie O'Neill was struggling on a weekend, so that might have played a factor in him coming off. He had a bad toothache all night, so he didn't really sleep. So I think the club provide dentists and that sort of stuff if you need it. Obviously, if you need scans and x-rays and stuff like that, we have a psychologist who comes in for anyone who wants to speak to her. Her name's Claire. If anyone wants to speak to her, they can have a one-on-one, or we have sometimes group sessions. But a normal day for me would probably be come home. If I'm home in time, I pick up my little girl from school. I normally have an afternoon nap, so I sleep for a couple of hours and then have my dinner, ice bath, and then watch a game if there's a game on TV or a game on the app, which you shouldn't really have, but I watch a game on the app, and then bed.
Interesting. So have you found a psychologist of help to you? Do you think that it makes any difference to the attitude of players at the level that we're at?
Yeah, I believe that. I've dealt with quite a few throughout my career. I don't really have the one-on-one sessions too much now myself. I read quite a lot of books. I listen to a lot of stuff regarding mental health and staying positive and all that sort of stuff. So I've took that on myself for the last couple of years. So I don't really see her too much, but I know it does benefit the boys. I know speaking to people helps. It's massive because football, you're getting judged every week. You know, sometimes things ain't going well. We've had a lot of success over the last 18 months, 2 years, but football's not always like that. It's going to be ups and downs. You know what I mean? There's going to be times where it won't be great. The fans will be on your back and you won't be playing well. So it's important that you've got these people you can speak to and get your problems off your chest.
Thank you for that insight. That's really interesting. Simon, I'll pass back to you.
Hi, Darren. Thanks very much. When you do retire in 10 years' time, where do you see, and where do you hope Leighton Orient as a club might be, and where do you think the Orient might be in the football pyramid?
Obviously, you have to take one step at a time. I would love them to be in the Championship, an established Championship club, that's stable, financially secure. I think with our owners and that, I don't think we have any problems with what happened before, because they're shrewd people. They know what they're doing, and they're not going to be silly with the money or with the club. So to be a Championship club, obviously fighting, our ultimate dream is obviously to get into the Premier League, but if we can get into the Championship and be a settled Championship club, a club that hasn't got to sell its best assets. So I think now even that's changing. I think the top young players are not looking to come here and leave, the ones that come through the academy, and the top ones on loan from Cat 1 and Cat 2 academies are coming in because they can see an opportunity to go on and have a great career. So I think we're starting to get that reputation now of getting the top youngsters, which is brilliant for us.
Right. Maybe you'll be still here as a coach, Darren.
Yeah, hopefully, fingers crossed.
Thank you so much for joining us on the Orient Hour tonight, Darren Prattley.
No worries.
Cheers. Thanks, Darren.
There was Darren Prattley, our captain there, feeling very optimistic and enthusiastic about the future. So, let's talk about the future. Over 500 away tickets already sold for Wigan away on Saturday. Gents, how are we going to get on at the DW? Tony?
I see a tight game coming up, but with Richie, they're always tight games, really. They don't tend to be 3-4s either way. Good game at our place, just reminiscing about it. They got a penalty in the first minute, the Sol Brin saved. Super strike by Fordy, and they got an equaliser. Big lad, 23, Humphreys was his name, I think, scored an equaliser the second half. It was a good game here. I suspect something reasonably tight up there. There's lots of room. I believe there's about 4,500 they can fit in away fans. So if anyone can
get
up there.
We've got the 500 done.
Yeah. If anyone can fit in there, then please get up there and support the boys.
Yeah, I sort of agree with that. I've been saying I'm not confident, but this one, I think Wigan, I don't know what sort of form they're in. I don't think they're in bad form, really. So
they lost on Saturday, I think, to Fleetwood, actually, on Saturday.
Fleetwood are doing all right, I'd be happy with a draw, probably. But as I say, like Oxford, I didn't think we'd get anything there, and we did. But I knew they were in bad form, so I think I was the only one that predicted a win for that. I mean, for Saturday here, I think I would say a draw. I could see some changes being made, as we mentioned earlier. I think possibly Monker will come out, and, there'll be a few changes around there. And, I think luckily, because we had the week off, hopefully people have got over their tiredness, so we might have Ollie O'Neill playing. But I'd be happy with a draw, and I think that would be my prediction, 1-1 again, something like that.
I think I'll go for a close win, maybe a 2-1 again.
This is why you're here, mate. It's
also glass half full, boys,
a little bit further ahead as well. Because next Tuesday we've got Port Vale at home, and then Stevenage away, another Tuesday, Saturday, before the postponed game Exeter. We've got Saturday off, but these three games are crucial to what's going to happen.
I think Stevenage are still they've played a game less than us, haven't they? So they're probably going to be playing on a few Tuesdays coming up anyway now. Yeah. So possibly the fact that we're playing the Tuesday and they're on the Saturday, they'll probably be playing that Tuesday as well. I think hopefully that'll make them just as tired as us this time, because it seems to really have an impact this season. So they're big games.
I mean, Port Vale will probably come and defend deep a little bit like we've been struggling with for a couple of defeats at home. So maybe it'll be a chance for us to work our way around that. And Stevenage the following Saturday will be a big one.
So, before we go, just some best wishes to some Orient fans, Gary Watt and Jay Edwards, who are both unfortunately in hospital at the moment. And fingers crossed that Theo Archibald makes a swift recovery from his operation. Just say thanks for Rich.
Thanks, mate.
Thanks, Tony. We'll be back next week.
We're not a city, we're not a town. We're the only one of us around. And you know where we can be found when Saturday comes again. We'll be trying to do our best to cheer all those on who wear the vest. Whatever challenge, whatever test, we'll lay an Orient from E10. Lay an Orient from E10. This is our club and we are proud. So sing it up and sing it loud. We were formed in 1881, Clanton, Orient, and so begun the old story, and on it runs. We're like an Orient from E10. Whatever challenge has come our way, the only faithful are here to stay. We will live to fight another day. We're like an Orient from E10. Like an Orient from E10. This is our club and we are proud. So sing it up and sing it loud. We're not a city, we're not a town.
We're the only one of us around, so you know where we can be found. When Saturday comes again, we'll be trying to do our best to cheer all those on who wear the vest. Whatever challenge, whatever test, we'll lay an Orient from E10.
On the hour, across Brentwood and Billericay, this is Phoenix FM News.